You're tuned to Focus on Campus, a weekly show which highlights faculty, staff, and students here at the University of Texas at El Paso. Good morning, I'm Louis Sines, your host for Focus on Campus, and joining us today is no stranger to KTEP. She is a co-host of one of the other shows we have here on KTEP. It's Dr. Liz Walsh. Dr. Walsh is a professor of biology here on campus, and she's here to talk about something very big coming to UTEP. It's the Rotifer Conference or Rotifer Symposium, and we'll talk a little bit more about what a rotifer is, and that's what Liz will tell us, and especially also about what's going on with this conference and what are some of the previous conferences and other things that they're going to be discussing. Liz, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thanks, Louis. It's my pleasure to be here.
So tell us a little bit about, I said rotifer. What is a rotifer?
Well, rotifers are the smallest multi-celled animals, and they live in primarily in freshwater, although there are some marine species, and there's about 2,000 species of them. So you may not have heard of them before, but they're very important to aquatic food webs, and they form the base of the animal food web. So everything bigger than them eats them, basically. So rotifers are very tiny multi-celled animals, and they're found almost in all freshwaters. So even if we went over to the little pond in Centennial Museum, there would be rotifers living there, too.
And so as far as the rotifers themselves, there are different kinds of rotifers?
Yeah, there's about 2,000 described species of rotifers, so that's a lot of different kinds, right? So, and they're very widespread across the planet. They're found in every kind of habitat. So the ones that I've been focusing, of course, have been in the Chihuahuan Desert, and we found over 300 species in our area here in the Chihuahuan Desert alone of the 2,000 species.
So as you mentioned right now that you've been studying those here in the area, they're specific to certain areas? That depends on how they live?
Yeah, well, there's 2,000 species. So some species are found across the globe. They have a cosmopolitan distribution, and those include some that are used in aquaculture. So rotifers are used by many people as food for larval fish and crabs and prawns. Some of them are only found here. So in our work here in the Chihuahuan Desert, we found many new species that we've described, several from Waco Tanks State Park and Historic Site.
And we'll talk a little bit more about some of the things that you've been studying here. But as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, you have a big conference symposium actually coming to UTEP. Tell us about that.
It's the 15th International Rotifer Symposium. And so this is a symposium that's held every 3 years for people across the globe that focus their studies on some aspect of rotifer biology. We're expecting about 90 participants. About 20 of them are from Mexico. So we have a lot of people in Mexico studying limnology. That's a study of freshwaters that focus on rotifers. They're coming from Mexico City at UNAM. They're coming from Cancun. They're coming from Juarez. We also have people coming from China, Japan, Korea, Israel, several European countries. So it'll be a real diverse group of participants.
And this is a big deal for UTEP to have landed this symposium, correct?
Like I said, it's held every 3 years, and it usually circulates around the world. So the last time it was actually held in the U.S. was in 2000. So this is only the second time it's been held in the U.S. The last one was actually held in the city of Budweis in Czech Republic.
Tell us a little bit about the last conference and what they studied and what are some of the things that they came up with.
Well, at the conference, people are presenting their latest research results. So at the conference itself, we really don't do a lot of studying per se, although we do have workshops where people learn new techniques and about new technologies that can be applied to rotifer research. So it's more getting updated on the latest findings of different aspects of rotifer biology. So usually there's a section on ecology or the study of how rotifers interact with other aquatic members of the community. There's also studies on aquaculture, like I said. Some people will be presenting work on molecular biology of rotifers. Others are studying how they disperse across landscapes because, as I said, there's several hundred species of them here in the Chihuahuan Desert, and you might wonder how a little tiny microscopic animal can move across the desert landscape. And so people will be talking about how they disperse through their resting stages, through wind and through water. We'll also be learning about their evolutionary biology and how they're related to other groups of organisms. One interesting thing that's recently been discovered is that there's this group of parasites called acanthocephalins that are actually highly modified rotifers. So we have a special section in this symposium coming up that will focus on the relationships between these freshwater rotifers that we typically think of and these obligate parasites, the acanth mesiphilins, that have been recently put into the group of rotifers based upon DNA evidence.
So if a rotifer from this area, Chihuahuan Desert, were to go somehow be transplanted to the ocean, would they be able to survive, or is this something that they have to adapt to in a different way?
Yeah, no, they couldn't survive probably in the ocean because of the high salt content. So there's certain rotifer species that live in the ocean are more tolerant and have adapted to those higher salinities. But the inland ones, we would find some of the same species here in the Chihuahuan Desert as we'd find in Cancun, and then we'd probably find some specialists as well, depending upon the exact conditions of the habitat of the water that they're living in. The main conditions are, like I said, salt, nutrient concentration, and turbidity, and other features of the habitat, like whether there are aquatic plants growing in the habitat or not, also helps determine which species you'll find there.
And as far as them being, as you mentioned, they're kind of like at the bottom of the food chain, so they get swallowed up. Is there a particular type of rotifer that different species prefer, or they just eat them all up?
There are some rotifers that have developed morphology or chemical defenses against predators, and then there's others that just are yummy little droplets of food. But the one that's used most extensively in aquaculture is called Brachyonis plicatilis. It occurs in brackish waters and the ocean as well, and in bays. And that one was the focus of a workshop that we held back 3 years ago here on the UTEP campus, where we had about 20 people coming in for that special workshop on just that species to try to describe whether all of these Brachyonis plicatilis strains that were being used in aquaculture and had been found across the globe were in fact the same species. And as a consequence of that last workshop, we published a paper where we used molecular techniques to show that the Brachyonis plicatilis are actually 15 different species that look almost the same to you and me because they're so small, they're hard to have morphological features that we can distinguish, but genetically they were as different from one another as, you know, dogs are from cats or something like that. So it was pretty a fascinating outcome from that workshop. And some of the same people that attended that workshop will be coming back to this symposium.
A question that some of our listeners might have is, okay, are rotifers good for anything as far as benefiting us?
Well, if we like clean water, they benefit us because they're part of the biological system that helps keep our waters clean. So they eat algae, bacteria, yeast, and convert that into biomass, and then that produces food for other organisms. And, of course, all of those aquatic organisms feed larger and larger organisms. So aquatic insect larvae, for instance, when they emerge and form these swarms of gnats, you see the swallows coming and eating those. So they fill a very vital role in aquatic systems by nutrient cycling and maintaining. They can help, you know, like I said, maintain good water quality. They also can teach us things about things like aging, because rotifers have a very interesting property where they, once they hatch, their cells don't undergo further division. So they have a set number of cells. So for like us, you know how we always hear about how we slough our skin cells and stuff like that, and we're regenerating new skin cells? They can't do that. And as we know, the aging process happens when we lose the ability to repair our cellular damage too. And so if we can study how rotifers survive without having, you know, fresh cells to replace those that are damaged, then we can use that information to see how aging occurs in other organisms.
As far as the people, participants coming to this symposium, are most of them professors, scientists at universities, or are there some scientists also in the private world?
Most of them are coming from universities, actually, and a lot of them are students, too. We have a large number of student participants, which is really great because they can see our beautiful campus and may want to come and study here. But we do have one group coming from the US EPA that's going to be joining us, and another person that studies acanthocephalin that I was mentioning earlier, he's from a clinical background. He's a parasitologist, so he'll be joining us. But most are university professors.
So we haven't talked about when the conference is and where it's going to be here on campus, if you wouldn't mind sharing that with us.
Yeah, the conference is going to be June 3 through 9th here at the university. We're going to be at a lot of different venues during the conference. We're going to start off with an opening reception over at the Centennial Museum. And then we're going to be meeting in various places around campus, like the Thomas Rivera Conference Center. We're going to have our poster sessions at the Health Sciences Building, because that's a beautiful new building. And then we'll be having some workshops in the Bioscience Building. So we'll be moving around. And we're also going to have a mid-conference excursion where we're going to take everybody to White Sands. So that will be nice. And then we also typically have a post-conference excursion, and we're going to be going to Carlsbad Caverns for that.
So some very interesting landscapes that they're going to see. Perhaps they've never seen White Sands.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure most of them have not seen White Sands or Carlsbad Caverns. And, of course, those places, even though we think of them as deserts, there's pockets of aquatic habitats within both of those places, too. So, like out at White Sands, we're going to go and see Lake Lucero, which is a big temporary lake that's very unique and very beautiful with huge gypsum crystals lining the shoreline. There may not be water in it while we're there, but we know that rotifers are there in their resting stages, and that when it rains, when we get the monsoons, then all of these small animals that are in resting stages hatch out and start undergoing their life cycle. So we'll go take a look at Lake Lucero while we're at White Sands. When we're going up to Carlsbad, we'll stop in at Rattlesnake Springs, another very interesting and important natural spring that's kind of in between Guadalupe Mountains and Carlsbad, in a real beautiful area.
You mentioned the resting periods. When is the resting period, and how long is the resting period for a rotifer? Does it depend?
It depends. So like out at Waco Tanks, you could imagine if you lived in one of those small rock depressions. We don't know when it's going to rain again out at Waco, right? It could rain tomorrow here in El Paso, but it may not rain in Waco Tanks. So these resting stages can remain dormant for decades and then hatch when conditions are favorable. So, in fact, I collected some of these diapausing ages from a population out at Waco Tanks back in 1998. And then two summers ago, we took those resting stages, added water, and the animals hatched out. So they can be dormant for sure for decades. And some other species that form dormant cysts, they've been recorded to be dormant for almost up to 1,000 years.
And as far as the conditions, you can create them for them?
Yeah, we can create them in the laboratory, or if in nature if it rains. But that's one really interesting thing, too, because the conditions for the different species vary as well. So even if we try to hatch them in the lab, some species we've never been able to hatch in the lab, although we find them all over in water sources in the Chihuahuan Desert, including at Waco Tanks. But if we take the resting stage in the lab and add water, we can't get it to hatch, because it might also depend upon the amount of dissolved oxygen, the light period. There's all kinds of different cues that the embryo uses to know when it's a good time to hatch.
So I know that you are on the organizing committee for this symposium, so you have a lot on your hands. Are you also going to present some of your findings that you mentioned earlier?
Yes, I'll be presenting a talk on my Waco Tanks research, because we have a special session on long-term research projects that are decadal or more, and I've been working out at Waco Tanks since I came to UTEP about 20 years ago or more. And then, of course, I have about 10 students and former students that are going to be presenting their works either in oral presentations or as posters. So that'll be fun, too. And some of the people from Mexico have come to UTEP as part of research experience for undergraduate programs. They're going to come back and present at the conference, so that will be fun to see them as well.
Liz, if people want to find out a little bit more of the symposium, is there a website that they can go to?
Yes, there is, Louie. It's at www.utep.edu/science/rotifera, rotiferaxv.
And that's
quite a mouthful.
Yes. And as you found out when I interviewed you before the show started, I asked you if I was pronouncing the word right, because rotifer is not something that people hear about all the time.
No, but they should, because they're very important little animals and they have fascinating biology. And we're really looking forward to learning a lot about their biology at this upcoming symposium.
Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thanks, Louie, for having me on the show.
We've been visiting with Professor Dr. Liz Walsh, talking about the upcoming symposium here at UTEP, June 3rd through the 9th, International Rotifer Symposium, and that's going to be, again, June 3rd through the 9th. If you want additional information, you can go to the UTEP webpage and type in, again, what is the name?
You can go to the website, which is www.utep.edu/science/rotifera, and rotifera is rotiferaxv.
Thank you so much, Liz. Focus on Campus is taped and produced at the KTUP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Lauren Terrazas. You've been tuned to Focus on Campus. I'm Luis Sainz.